Irish Illustrated Insider subscribers. This is Drew Mentock, and I'm here to bring you the 14th episode from our bi-weekly podcast series in the feed, Irish Illustrated Interviews. Today, we're sharing my conversation with Patrick Creedon, a 1989 University of Nottingham graduate and award-winning documentary filmmaker, whom Irish fans likely know for his work directing Catholics vs. Convicts and Hesburgh. He's also in the midst of a new project on legendary Nottingham football coach Newt Rockne. Our conversation delves into his familial connections to the university and the football team, which date back more than a century. We also discuss his experiences as a Nottingham student, paying extra attention to the role he and his roommate, Patrick Walsh, played in the Catholics vs. Convicts story, the Nottingham-Miami rivalry, and how he got involved with ESPN's 30 for 30. Then we explore our Hesburgh, a film that details the life of Father Theodore Hesburgh, the University of Nottingham president from 1952 until 1987, was inspired by his time on campus gathering footage and interviews for Catholics versus Convicts. Here's my interview with Patrick. What's up, everyone? I'm here with Patrick Creedon, a 1989 University of Nottingham graduate and award-winning documentary filmmaker. You're one of the youngest cameramen in the history of PBS and spent more than a decade in the industry as a freelancer before directing your first full-length feature film, Wordplay, about the New York Times crossword editor, Will Shortz. It's a project you and your wife, Christine O'Malley, produced together. You also founded a production company, O'Malley Creedon Productions. You've also directed other films, such as IOUSA, If You Build It, The Loyola Project, as well as two documentaries Nottingham fans will likely know you for, Catholics vs. Convicts and Hesburgh. Additionally, you're currently working on a project about Newt Rockne, all of which we'll discuss later. Patrick, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
So I know from watching Catholics versus Convicts that your family has a long history and connection to Notre Dame, but what was your first reaction to the university? Did it have to do with football, or what really kind of first drew you to the school?
I grew up in a Notre Dame family. So my grandfather was, he arrived at Notre Dame in the fall of 1924. He was recruited to play football for Newt Rockne. That was actually the year they won their first national championship. So our family connection goes way back. And then my father was the class of 60. And between the two of them, you know, I think all of us in our family just kind of grew up around Notre Dame football and developed a real love for it when we were all young. I'm talking about like my siblings and my cousins and things like that. And sure, I mean, I went to games when I was a little kid. I went to lots of games, and I really kind of fell in love with the team and fell in love with the school and everything about it. And I entered Notre Dame in the fall of 1985. And as it times out, my senior year was the year of our last national championship and the famous Catholics versus Convicts game. So it was, you know, I had a very unique connection to Notre Dame and to that game in 1988, just because of the family I grew up in. And also just, you know, the Catholics versus Convicts story is really something that I lived. It's not something I really had to research. I you know, my roommate, Pat Walsh, made those shirts. Tony Rice was our next door neighbor in Dillon Hall. It was so personal. And that's part of, I think, why it was so fun to make that movie.
And did you know you wanted to get into film once you got to Notre Dame, or how did that journey start?
Well, yeah, when we were younger, growing up in Chicago, we actually did a little bit of modeling and acting. So this is, you know, this is when I was real little, but like we would be in like Sears catalogs, or we were in McDonald's commercials and things like that. Chicago's a really big advertising town. And so we did this as kids. It was really fun. We would miss a day of school. We'd get to go downtown. You know, I made a commercial with Walter Payton when I was a little kid.
Cool.
We did all this really fun stuff. And even though I didn't really have a burning desire to become an actor, I was on film sets a lot and photo shoots a lot. And that was appealing to me. And so the idea of telling stories and working on films, especially in nonfiction, that was just something that I got that idea in my head as a really young person. And when I got out of college at Notre Dame, I was lucky enough to get a job at public television in Chicago right out of college. And I've pretty much been doing that ever since.
What are some ways that you think your time at Notre Dame maybe helped to prepare you for this career? And I know you worked for the Observer and did some things like that, but how do you think it prepared you to kind of get started in the industry so quickly?
Well, I mean, what's kind of funny is as a student at Notre Dame, you know, there's a really good major called Film, Television, and Theater, FTT. That's a really popular major at Notre Dame. And we really worked very, really closely with Ted Mandel and Bill Donnarumma and other people who teach at FTT. And we've hired quite a few people out of that program at Notre Dame. But when I was in college, we didn't have that. And the idea of studying film and studying television was kind of a relatively new idea. I mean, there were people studied that at USC, people studied that at NYU, but Notre Dame was not really offering that kind of a major. So I, not only that, I mean, they had something called Communications and Theater, COTH, which is a terrible acronym, COTH. Besides the bad acronym, I just felt like studying communications and aspiring to be a filmmaker felt irresponsible to me, frankly, which is really crazy. But I mean, this is in the 1980s. The industry was a lot smaller then. There was a lot less opportunity. So I didn't study any of this when I was there. But what I did do, and I think about this quite often, is that my senior year at Notre Dame, they have something called senior week after, you know, when you're ready to graduate. So you're done with all your classes, but you're not graduating for another week. So you have this one week, and it's a lot of parties and it's a lot of packing up and getting ready to move and head out into the real world. And it's an exciting time. I spent my entire senior week in my room off campus. I didn't go to any of the parties. I cut together a video of basically our 4 years in college. I took people's scrapbooks and I had a little video camera that I borrowed from somebody. It was like a home movie camera. And I had two, it's so crazy to think about this now, but like I had two VCRs next to each other and I would like record from one to the other. It was like a real primitive kind of editing system. And I showed that movie, this 20-minute video, I showed this at our big dinner for me and all my friends and all our families. It was kind of a recap I did two of them. I did one for my Dylan Hall friends, and I did another one for just my roommate's senior year. Jimmy Johnson is actually in that video because, again, that was the Catholics versus. It's funny. I feel like I made Catholics versus Convicts when I was in college. I made like an early version of it, and then I did it again later for ESPN. But I enjoyed that so much. You know, the time flew by when I was there weren't enough hours in the day. So again, you know, I had a whole week and it was like, oh, are you coming to the party? And I said, well, I'll come later, but I'm working on this thing. And I didn't go to any of those parties. I wanted that movie, that short video, 20-minute video, to be good. You know, I'm trying to kind of capture and retell my time here in college and celebrate this achievement of all of our friends. And I just fell in love with that. And that's basically what I still do. I mean, I do that for a living. And so it's funny. It wasn't so much that I studied film and television at Notre Dame, but I kind of fell in love with this idea of doing that. And that's what I'm still doing today.
It's funny. I was going to ask you, because in the film Catholics versus Convicts, you see a lot of old footage of your friend Pat Walsh selling t-shirts and moving stuff around. Is that footage that you had gathered just for that project or something like that?
Yeah. Well, there's a little bit of a cheat there.
Okay.
And it's just a little cheat. You know, in the world of documentary filmmaking, you have to take a little bit of creative license, I think. Because, you know, I'm thinking of you know, I'm a big fan of Ken Burns and his work. And I really love the movie The Civil War. I think that's really, really one of the great films of all time, frankly. It's like an 11-hour retelling of the Civil War. Well, they didn't have B-roll of the Civil War. You know, they had oil paintings and they had letters and they had Matthew Brady photos and stuff like that. So there's a lot of creative license that Ken took when he made that film. But the retelling of that story really rings true. In the case of Walshy, I didn't have a video camera when I was in college, but I started working for public television that next year. Once I had graduated, I started working for public television and I bought my own camera, almost like a home movie camera, but more professional. You know, it was like a more of a higher end camera. And the footage that you see in Catholics versus Convicts is actually something that I shot in 1991. So this was 2 years after we had gotten out of school. Walshy was still doing t-shirts.
Right.
And he was still, and that footage from that movie, or the footage from what you see in Catholics versus Convicts, was actually a football game that took place in Tallahassee. It was Florida versus Florida State. Walshy flew like 15 of us down there to sell shirts. His operation had grown a little bit and got a little more sophisticated. We had walkie-talkies and things like that to help us as we were selling. And I remember telling Walshy, I was like, you know, I don't really want to. I mean, I'll go down there. It'll be fun to hang out with all of our friends in Tallahassee for a big football game. I don't want to sell t-shirts. That was just not my. It's just not my thing. And he's like, you're not selling t-shirts. You're going to make a documentary about what we're doing this weekend. Because he knew, he knew that he had this very unique business. I mean, he brought in like 60 grand that day.
Wow.
I mean, and that's where you see the briefcase and all the cash and fistful of cash. Now, again, that is what Walshy did at Notre Dame, but I didn't have any footage of that.
Right.
So we used that footage from a few years later and dropped it in and kind of were careful the way we cut it. And again, I think that's something, frankly, that's quite common. I actually haven't really ever talked about that, but that was, we were lucky to have that footage because that B-roll footage is exactly what he would be doing on a Saturday in South Bend. It was just that I didn't have a camera then. And so we use footage from a few years later.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I don't think there's anything weird about that. But I was curious, like, man, how did you get all this? Like, this is so, so interesting to see him kind of running the show back then. So,
well, I remember. So the editor on that film is a Notre Dame graduate. His name is Nick Andert. Just a terrific editor. William Neal helped out on that film as well. Another Notre Dame graduate. He was an assistant editor on that film. But we were pretty far into making Catholics versus Convicts. And it just occurred to me one day, I'm like, oh my God, I have all this footage of Walshy from 1991. I just got to go digging for it. And I went down into my archives here at home in our home office. And I went digging through all these tubs of footage. And I found it. I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is all that footage. And I walked it into the edit room and Nick started watching it. He's like, where have you been hiding all this from? I mean, this is gold. This is crazy that you have this footage of, you know, 23-year-old Pat Walsh selling t-shirts and raking in money as fast as he could rake it in. So it's really funny. I mean, the irony of Catholics versus Convicts is that idea was pitched to me by 30 for 30. That we did not pitch that idea to them. In fact, in 100 years, it would never occur to me. I love 30 for 30, and I love that brand. That's a great team, and they make great movies there. And I always wanted to work with them, but it had never occurred to me to pitch them Catholics versus Convicts because I lived that story. You know what I mean? It didn't feel like a story to me. It just felt like a memory to me, you know, and I would never be like, oh, I should pitch them that idea. But they knew that I went to Notre Dame. They knew that I was there at around that same time. And they had always wanted to find a project for me and Christine to do at 30 for 30. And so they ended up pitching that idea to us. And we were like, oh, that's a good idea. We should probably do that. So that's really how that film came to be.
So they weren't necessarily aware of just how closely connected you were to that story though, when they pitched it?
Wow. No, they weren't. So they on that first call, they're like, they had said, they had emailed and they're like, we have a Notre Dame story that we would like for Pat to consider doing. And again, it's 30 for 30. I mean, we people reach out to us, you know, on a fairly regular basis. And they're like, we have an idea. We want to pitch it and see if it's a good fit. Well, 30 for 30 is different. They've made so many good movies. And most of the filmmakers I know would love to work for them, you know, and they've hired some of the great filmmakers there. So when they reached out, it's like, oh, this is kind of interesting. You know, Notre Dame story. I wonder what they're thinking about there and what they want to do. And when they pitched us Catholics versus Convicts, it was like, oh my God, I never really thought of that. I mean, I think the other thing about that is that the Catholics versus Convicts for years, I'm talking 25 years now, since between the time that we graduated and the time that we made that film, it was a very, very painful memory for Pat Walsh. And he did not enjoy talking about it. He did not enjoy reliving it, because that t-shirt ultimately is what cost him his spot on the basketball
team. Right.
And that was very painful. And it's hard to really overestimate just how it was just brutally painful for him for that to be the outcome of making that shirt and basically that game. I mean, on the one hand, the game, if you were a student then, or even if you're just a fan of Notre Dame football, that game is really iconic. And that was the make or break moment in that season, which led to our last national championship. So that game is going to live on forever. But Walsh's unique connection to it was very difficult. And, you know, there was a lot of back and forth as to whether or not he even really wanted to relive all that. Luckily, once we finished the movie, that movie has become very, very popular. And ESPN airs it all the time.
Yes.
And the feedback that he's gotten has been 100% positive. It's no longer a painful memory for him. It's more of like a celebration of not just the team, obviously, but it's a celebration of his unique character and the fact that we just didn't know anyone. He was so unique that for all of our friends, it was almost like, a Ferris Bueller character. If you know that film, he was the guy who's like, you know, it'd be great. Let's rent a house off campus and turn it into a fraternity. Okay. I mean, he did that like 3 weeks into his freshman year in college. He rented a house off campus and we had lots of parties and it was really fun. School didn't love it, but he was just someone who he always has been, someone whose dreams really big and then does the hard work to bring those things to fruition. And you know, I mean, the football team and Coach Holtz, they did what they did, and they obviously deserve all the credit for their accomplishments, and we're all so proud of them. But this story that was of what was happening behind the scenes on that day is, you know, it's sort of, in some ways, it's kind of humanized, I think, that game and that team. It's hard for most people to relate to a Tony Rice or a Pat Terrell or a Pat Eilers or any Ricky Waters, any of the guys, Rocket Ishmael. I mean, us mere mortals can't really talk about the time we ran back a 98-yard touchdown from a kickoff like Rocket used to do. But we can all relate to the Pat Walshes because he's just like the rest of us. And I think that's part of the reason that people just like that story. It has a very relatable thread running through it.
So do you feel like, in hindsight, that movie helped him kind of process what had happened back then? Very cool.
For sure. And that, you know, one of the things that's fun about making documentaries is that, you know, people only have their own perspective. They can only see the world around them through their own eyes. But when you when you make a documentary about somebody, you are able to tell their story from multiple perspectives, and they're able to see the story from through other people's eyes, frankly. And I think that's why I love documentaries so much, is, you know, it's a way to kind of organize and reimagine things that we felt like we knew pretty well or had a decent handle on. But then if you can find a unique thread and a really interesting kind of way to retell the story, let's say, it not only is that a unique thing for the subjects to have, but the retelling of that story just becomes a shared experience, you know. I mean, I've been around Pat Terrell tailgaters. You know, he was very famous, one of the real heroes of the Catholics versus Convicts game, and he batted down the 2-point conversion, and he had the pick six earlier in the game. I mean, Pat was a true Notre Dame legend. But I think that a lot of the interaction he has with fans revolves around the fact that they've seen this movie, and they've seen it told a very specific way, and so that's part of what's the fun of doing these things.
What was it like kind of picking out the Notre Dame football characters you really wanted to highlight? Like, for instance, I know you see Reggie Ho kicking field goals in the game, and I know they even did it his own, like a 30 for 30 short on him. So that's another character that you could have gotten into more, but didn't. Like, how did you kind of be like, these are the, you know, three or four or five players I really want to get into their story and get into a little bit of their backstory as well?
That's a great question. And there's like 100 people on that team.
Yeah.
So who do you choose to focus on and not focus on? I mean, the main guys we focused on, the main characters it was Tony Rice, it was Pat Eilers, it was Pat Terrell, and then it was Chris Zorich. Now, we interviewed a lot of people. There's a lot of other players that are in the film, but those were like the guys that we kind of built the movie around. And all three of them scored touchdowns in the game. Tony scored a touchdown, Pat Eilers scored a touchdown, and Pat Terrell scored a touchdown. So in a way, because we picked those characters, they all have a big moment in the game, at least one big moment, you know, some of them have multiple big moments in the game. But also, the Pat Eilers made sense because we were such good friends with him, and he was a walk-on. So you kind of, and Walsh wanted to be the walk-on of the basketball team. So Pat Eilers gives you a look at just the whole idea of trying to be a walk-on and how special that is, especially at Notre Dame. I mean, I think being a walk-on at Notre Dame is a big deal, whether you're on the football team or the basketball team or any team, the women's basketball team. I mean, if you're good enough to walk on to the varsity team, there's just great story. I mean, look at Rudy.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that kind of allowed us to sort of organize the film around these main characters. Obviously, it was a real treat to get to interview Coach Holtz and Coach Johnson. Coach Johnson actually sent me a thank you note.
Oh, wow.
After he saw the film, he really enjoyed the film and wrote a little handwritten note. He's like, this was really well done. And so that's it. And I always, whenever we're making a movie, I mean, we're making this new film about Newt Rockne now. You know, I think with any story, you know, you try to identify who are your main characters, and then you try to identify who is your supporting cast, like you would with a movie that's scripted, you know, with actors and actresses. And I think with Catholics versus Convicts, we had a couple of people that made sense as main characters. And then there's probably 10 or 12 other people that we interviewed from the team who are more supporting characters. And the Miami guys were great as well. They were terrific, especially Steve Walsh. I've gotten to know Steve really well. Cleveland Gary was great. Leon Searcy is very, very funny. And he was really good in the film. And so it's good. It's a, you know, the thing about making a documentary film, and I think this is true no matter what your subject is, it's a big responsibility, you know, and you don't want to screw it up. And so I felt that throughout the making of Catholics versus Convicts was, you know, we're not going to be able to include everyone in the film, for one. There's too many players. There's too many stories. So let's pick a few good ones and try to tell those stories as well as we can. I should mention, we had the huge advantage of working with Jerry Barca. And Jerry had written a book about the 1988 team.
Okay.
Which was terrific. And Jerry had already developed relationships with a lot of the people who are in our film, but he's 10 years younger than me. So he had told this story in book form from a different perspective. And there were things in his book that I would have never known. And there were things in my lived experience that he couldn't possibly have known. And so teaming up with Jerry was huge. And that gave us like a real advantage when we started. I think if it was just me, it would have been a very different kind of story. But Jerry and his book added a real richness to the story that I wasn't aware of, frankly. So yeah.
I have a few more questions on the movie before we move on to other topics. Sure. But one other thing, I'm kind of curious about the creative choice to put yourself into the movie and you know, show you interviewing different people. I assume the more I thought about it, it almost seemed, given your connection to it, maybe disingenuous not to do that. But you mentioned at the top of this recording, even, that you didn't get into this industry to be on camera. So what was that kind of creative decision like for you?
Yeah, I've seen that like when filmmakers put themselves into the film or they narrated it. I've seen that done in the past. I've seen it done badly, actually, where you're watching the movie, you're like, why is the director narrating? Or why am I looking at the director? This doesn't make any sense. And it always felt, you know, if it's not done well, or if it doesn't add something to the story, it just feels kind of self-indulgent. Like, oh, I'm making a movie, I'm going to put myself in it. And I didn't want to do that. I was like, well, the last thing I want to do is like insert my face into this story, because I didn't play on the team. I didn't have a t-shirt business at the time. You know, you can make an argument that I don't belong in the film, but at the same time, I came to realize that I saw this entire story unfold with my own two eyes. And if you have that as a tool, you should use it, you know. And by the way, if we knew going into it, if me narrating that film or me being in the film, if it wasn't working, we could just take myself out of it.
Right.
But it was working. And it also sort of lends like a certain amount of credence to it, because it's like, well, this is the guy who made the movie, but he was also there. And there he is. Like, there he is in a picture with Matt Walsh, or there he is in a picture with Tony Rice. It's like, well, this is his retelling and remembering of what happened during his senior year in college. And I think it rings true ultimately. So yeah, I it was not something I set out to do. And John Dahl from 30 for 30 really encouraged me to do that. And the more we did it, the more we were like, oh, this allows us to do things that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. So let's just leave it in.
And I'm curious, during your interviews, you watch the game with a lot of the players and both coaches.
Yeah.
And go through plays. I don't know if that was on an iPad or a TV, but there's the play where I think it was Miami receiver Andre Brown didn't actually catch the touchdown. Is that something you saw when you're researching, be like, oh, we got to kind of surprise them with this? Or were you surprised that they weren't even aware of it?
We definitely found that play in the edit room. Now I've learned later from like diehard Notre Dame fans that there are diehard Notre Dame fans, my brother-in-law Dan Murphy being one of those people, who are well aware of that Andre Brown catch, if you will. But I didn't know that. And so when we were making the movie, we watched the game and we watched it very closely. And I remember watching that play, and he rolls over. And the ball is like 6 feet away from him as he's rolling over, and you're watching, you're like, damn it. Like, we were all doing what everyone else is doing in the movie. They're like, did he catch that? Like, is that a catch? And the interesting thing about that play is because Miami lost the game, nobody's revisited that play.
Right.
I mean, they it was a questionable call. It could have gone the other way, but they ended up getting a touchdown that maybe wasn't a touchdown, but they lost. So it's fine. The Cleveland Gary play, I mean, they watched that. I guarantee you there's someone in Miami right now watching that play on YouTube being like, that was a touchdown. I mean, like, you know, that has never gone away. The Cleveland Gary touchdown or not touchdown or fumble, whatever you want to call it, has never gone away. I'm really happy, you know, frankly, not just as a Notre Dame fan, but as a storyteller, that play kind of faded into history. And because you can see the reaction on the Miami, and my aunt and Coach Holtz, he has a really funny reaction to that play. People just hadn't gone back and looked at that play. And the nice thing about it, just if you're just a sports fan in general, you never want to feel like you won a game because of a questionable call. And the fact that we one call went in our favor and one call went into their favor kind of evens it out. And I think that's a much better outcome. So it's a really important moment in the game. And I think also in the film, because until everyone looks at that play again more closely, it feels like Notre Dame got a big break.
Right.
And after you look at that, you realize, well, Miami got a big break too. And it's just a better outcome if you're a sports fan, no matter who you're rooting for, frankly.
Definitely. And I also think it's really interesting too, to your point, with the fumble, they're processing a play and have a narrative probably built up in their head that fits what they want, that they've, you know, thought about for 28 years, I guess, at the time. Whereas the other play, they're seeing for the first time. So you're maybe getting a more genuine reaction, because it kind of seemed the Notre Dame Miami guys were both had their differing opinions on the fumble, but the catch, everyone kind of saw the same way, which was really interesting.
I think the Andre Brown touchdown, I got the feeling that everyone we showed that to, it was the first time they'd ever seen that, you know?
Yeah.
And you could see the look on their face. They're just like, ooh. The people are like, wait, play that back. Like, I mean, they just haven't seen it before. And it's a nice reveal, frankly. It's new information for a story that we all feel like we knew really well, but maybe we didn't know it as well as we thought we did. Yeah, that game, it was just a magnificent football game. There were, I think it was like 26 future NFL contracts
Wow.
on the Notre Dame side of the ball, and there were like 25 future future NFL contracts on the Miami side. I mean, there were over 50 players that day on the field who signed NFL contracts, which is just, it's hard to even get your head around that. I mean, there was so much talent on the field that day. And I think at the end of the day, like, I would say the one thing, you know, that ESPN had done these movies called The U. They did The U, and then they did the sequel, The U2, by a filmmaker named Billy Corgan. He's a very talented filmmaker, and those movies are really fun. But it's really all about Miami, and it's a celebration of kind of where that program came from under Howard Schnellenberger, I think I'm saying his last name correct. And just the kind of the rise and almost fall of that program, not fall, but you know, the rise and then the receding of the program in the latter years. And that's fun. And that's great. And it's fun. Those movies are really fun. I think with Catholics versus Convicts, we really did not want to make a Notre Dame movie. We wanted to make a movie about college football. And my hope was that people who are not Notre Dame fans and not Miami fans still love that movie because it's got so many of the things that we love about college football in it. And that's what we set out to do. And you know, I'm really happy with the results. you know, it's funny. I may be the only guy who went to Notre Dame who feels this way, but I'm not a huge fan of the movie Rudy. I mean, it's very famous and it's a great story, but it's very Hollywood. You know, it's very, very, very Hollywood. And after a while, if you've seen it a few times, it doesn't seem to be really based in reality.
Right. I feel the same way, to be honest with you.
It's kind of a puffed up version of obviously something that was a true story.
Right.
But it's a retelling that feels far away from what really happened. And that's fine. I mean, it's a Hollywood movie. That's fine. What's really fun about Catholics versus Convicts, that is what happened. All the stories in that movie are what happened. They're all based. I mean, they're all factual and sort of, you know, all those stories come from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And that's part of the reason why I really, really love, of all the different forms of entertainment, I really love a really good documentary, because in some ways, at least for me, it's more satisfying than seeing a Hollywood version of a story. And I love Hollywood movies, don't get me wrong, but, you know, the stories that happened around the Catholic versus Convicts game and the stories that happened around the 1988 team are just amazing stories. And we had an opportunity to go back and kind of relive many of those stories. And it was really fun. It's a really fun. The thing I love most about that movie is that it's sort of taken the monkey off of Pat Walsh's back. It's no longer a painful thing for him to talk about. It's the opposite. He loves meeting. He gets people see him all the time. People stop him all the time on campus. He's people are like, oh my God, you know, you're the guy. I love that. I love that for him. And I'm happy that the movie has become so popular.
And speaking of other movies about the university, you did Hesburgh a few years later. What kind of made you want to get back into the Notre Dame universe with another film, obviously on a much different topic that, I mean,
yeah,
you know, he had influence over football, but that's really not what the movie is much about at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I look at all of the movies that I've made, I'm starting my 10th movie right now as a director. I always try to find something that makes it personal to me, you know, because then I feel invested in it. You know, there's a lot of interesting topics out there that we could make a movie about, but if I don't have some sort of personal connection to it, I don't want to spend 2 years on a story that, you know, that somebody else might have a better connection to. So we've always looked for stories that feel really personal to us. And when we were shooting Catholics versus Convicts, that was the year that Father Ted Hesburgh died. He died earlier that year. Well, I was on campus shooting Catholics versus Convicts. I probably was on campus like 4 or 5 times that year shooting that movie. And there was all of this remembrance of Father Ted, and Notre Dame Magazine had done a really good issue about his life and his legacy. And the more I kind of soaked that up and started to have a much better understanding of how big of a influence he had in America and in the world, I was like, boy, that feels like a great story that's just sort of hiding in plain sight. And Pat Eiler said to me during the day that I spent with him and interviewed him, he's like, Creeds, he's like, what are you doing after you finish this movie? And I was like, I don't know, but like, I think we could make a movie about Father Ted. I mean, I think that could be a great story. And he's like, done. We're doing it. I was like, okay. And it turned out that really, really did want to tell that story. And what happens with a lot of independently produced films, Hesburgh was, you know, Catholic versus Convicts was produced by ESPN. Hesburgh is an independently produced film. There was nobody at some network that like greenlit that film. We just went off and made that film because we wanted to tell that story. And what we were able to do was Pat was able to kind of spearhead the fundraising around that film.
Oh, cool.
And he got there were probably about 50 different people who donated money to make that movie. And, you know, I made that movie the same way we make all of our movies, which is, you know, I said to Notre Dame, this is what we'd like to do. I didn't ask their permission, frankly. I told them this is what we're doing. I did not make that movie with the university. I wanted to have independence from the school. You know, we made a movie about the New York Times crossword puzzle. We did not make that with the New York Times.
Right.
We made that independently. And I think that's really important. I think you run into real trouble if your partner on a film is really your subject. That really doesn't work too well. So Notre Dame said that they would give us access to the archives and to the campus. We raised that money independently. I had final cut, talking about Hesburgh, and we went off and made the film. And it was really, really rewarding for us. You know, there were about 20 Notre Dame students or alums that worked on that film, including our composer, Alex Mansour, two of our editors, assistant editor, associate producer, bunch of PAs. You know, we had a lot of people who knew the Hesburgh story pretty well and who worked on the film. Gary Barker produced that film. So that's basically how that movie came to be. And really love that film. I'm proud of the film. And Ted Hesburgh ended up becoming, he's an incredible character. It's you kind of have to see the movie to really get your head around it. It's on Amazon Prime. The trailer is on YouTube. The trailer is really easy to find. But it's, boy, could we use a Ted Hesburgh right now? Because both sides of the political spectrum are tearing each other apart, and Ted Hesburgh was really good at building bridges between people. And yeah, he's a real hero. So, and so we had so much fun making the Hesburgh story, and Catholics versus Convicts was such a success that it occurred to us, like, it would be fun to do a third project about Notre Dame. We actually kind of looked into maybe doing something about Frank Leahy. We talked to Ivan Maisel, who's the college football writer, the terrific writer. And he was writing a book about Frank Leahy, which just came out. It's a terrific book. I've read it cover to cover. I really loved it. But at the end of the day, Frank Leahy won 4 national championships and was one of the great coaches of all time. But Newt Rockne is such a character. He was an innovator. He was a great coach. He died way too young. And even his like fiercest competitors, I'm talking about like the Fielding Yosts from Michigan and people who used to compete against him on the playing field as coaches, they were devastated when he passed away. He was 43 years old when he died. And there's something about his story that's really cinematic. It's a football story first and foremost, but it's really the Newt Rockne story is really a story about an entrepreneur. Not just an entrepreneur in the dollars and cents meaning, but like he's like a social entrepreneur. He could see, first of all, he loved the game of football and was a great player, as we all know. But he could see and he could feel the popularity rising. And he could see that this was a new phenomenon in America. At the time when Newt Rockne was playing football as a, you know, in like high school and playing in college at Notre Dame, there was only one professional sport in America, and it was baseball. There was baseball, and everything else was like stuff we did on the weekends with our friends, and it was all kind of hobbies and not organized. There was, certainly was no NFL, you know, as you probably know. Newt Rockne saw that college football could be every bit as famous and popular as baseball was, which at the time was like, well, this is a pretty barbaric sport, and you know, kids were dying. Lots of players were dying. I'm talking 12, 15, 18, 20, 22 players every single year were dying playing college football. This is back in the late 1800s and the early 1900s. Teddy Roosevelt, who was president at the time, got a bunch of the big college football minds together in 1905, and he said, "You either make this game safer, or I'm gonna outlaw it." You know, he had 4 sons who all played college football, and he loved college football, but he's like, "We just can't have kids dying." Newt Rockne, he didn't arrive at Notre Dame as a player until 1910, but he was well aware of the game. He was a terrific football player and a terrific track star. And he was just like the right guy at the right time when it came to college football. And that's the story we're trying to tell now. We're just getting started. This will probably take us about 18 months to finish it, but it's a terrific story. It's almost like, I mean, for people who are familiar with both movies, I think the Rock Me story is going to sort of feel like if we took Catholics versus Convicts and Hesburgh and kind of put them together. Yeah. It's a football story, but it's a lot more than a football story. And at the end of the day, from everyone I've talked to and everyone, all the stuff I've read and all the stuff I've read about his untimely death, et cetera, Rock Me was a good man, first and foremost. He was a good man, and his players and his peers loved him. And I'm drawn to characters like that. I don't want to spend a year and a half or 2 years making a movie about someone who's kind of a jerk. Life's too short. The Rock Me story is a good fit for me and my team, because it's the kind of story I like to tell. It's the kind of character I like to tell, but also growing up in the family I grew up in, having a grandfather who's my namesake, who went to Notre Dame because of Coach Rock Me. It's a real personal angle to it. Now, I don't know that we're going to do that in this film the way we did with Catholics versus Convicts, but it's, I'm really excited and a little bit intimidated to now that we're making this film. It's a big story, very, very big story.
To your point, we had Ivan Maisel on an earlier episode of this podcast, and I read his book as well. And Frank Layer is kind of the opposite, where I don't think any of his peers liked him. So not quite the same figure. And I also think it's interesting with Rockne and Hesburgh. I feel like they're people, I grew up in South Bend, like you're very well aware who they are, and you know little bits about their story, or maybe I've seen the Hesburgh statue in South Bend with Martin Luther King Jr. and stuff, but to really know them the way you learn about Father Hesburgh, which I rewatched that as well, I could see I know maybe a little more now because of my job about Newt Rockne, but there's still so much more about him that I'm unfamiliar with. And I think it'll be really interesting to potentially get a little more into that.
Yeah. The other thing about Rockne I should point out, though, is his story took place 100 years ago. There is film footage. You know, there is film footage as you get to 1923 and 1924. Obviously, 24 was the year of the Four Horsemen and also the year of our first national championship in Notre Dame. Once you get to that point, and Notre Dame is becoming quite famous, there's more film cameras around. There's film footage of practices. There's film footage of games. But like a lot of this story is sort of been lost to history. There's some photographs, but I mean, it's just going to be a little harder to tell this story because we don't have the same kind of material that we had with the other films. So we're really excited about it.
Other thing I want to talk to you about, and this kind of relates to the Catholics versus convicts thing, is you have a lot of association and you're around Notre Dame for a lot of your movies, but what's it like for you as a Notre Dame fan now? I know they've had some, you know, recent success, maybe some controversy with getting left out of the playoff this year, but what's it like for you as somebody who people now publicly are going to associate you with Notre Dame, but what's it actually like for you as a fan of the university athletics?
I mean, you know, I definitely enjoy it. You know, I think it's really nice being back on campus. It's always nice to meet people who have seen our films and who enjoyed our films. Our daughter is actually a freshman at St. Mary's this fall and this year, I should say. It's January 20th today. So she's in her freshman year at St. Mary's. And it's great. It's great being back on campus. It's great to have this kind of unique relationship with the school. But, you know, at the end of the day, like with both of the films that we've made, and also especially with Rockne, now that we're in the middle of that, I like being independent of the school. I've never been hired by the university to make a movie for them or with them. You know, I'm independent and I treat these stories the way we treat all of the projects we do. I just happen to have a very unique relationship with the school, and I'm an alum of the school. And that's helpful. That makes these stories very familiar to me. But I definitely, you know, a lot of the filmmakers whose work I look up to and whose work I admire, you know, they tend to, there's certain themes or there's certain stories that they retell over and over. And even though, you know, they might make 10 or 15 or 20 movies in their careers, there are certain things that they go back to. And, you know, now that I'm kind of moving through my own career and I've made a lot of different movies, I think the stories that I tell the best are the ones that feel very personal to me. And these Notre Dame stories feel very personal to me. I'm not trying to like insert myself or my family into them. It's just that I want all of our movies to be good, but if we're making a movie about a Notre Dame story, I think there's an added pressure that it's gotta be really terrific, because I'm gonna have to answer for it. I'm gonna have to be standing at a tailgater talking to someone, and either we landed the plane or we didn't. And I think so far with our first two films, they've been really well received. So that doesn't mean I'm not nervous. You know, I'm a nervous wreck about Rock Me. This is a big story, and most people know a little bit about Rock Me, and we're going to come in and try to tell his story on a really grand scale. This movie's going to be, it's a feature length documentary, which means it's going to be 90 or 100 minutes long. Our goal is for this to be seen on a national scale, not just for the Notre Dame community, and for it to be reviewed in the New York Times and the Washington Post and Entertainment Weekly. You know, we're trying to take this story out, you know, onto the main stage of American pop culture, so to speak. And we're a long way from shore. I mean, we're just getting started. So this is the part of the process where it's like, you're kind of nervous, like, are we going to be able to do this or not? But we have a great team. The team that's making this film, most of them were involved in the other two films. So, you know, that makes me a little more confident, let's say.
Definitely. And I know you have to go in a little bit. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about is, you mentioned it's January 20th. So the national championship was last night, where IU beat Miami. But now, kind of with the drama around the playoffs between Notre Dame and Miami this year, and even how the ACC was tweeting pro Miami stuff, and it's kind of feels like that rivalry is maybe at its peak since the Catholics First Convict series, and they meet again, as we talked briefly offline before, meet again on November 7th. Marcus Freeman is so well aware of that last night on game day, he picked Miami for the specific reason he didn't want to give the Hurricanes bulletin board material. So seems like that's already kind of well aware of that, but kind of curious from your perspective, as you mentioned, you're so familiar with that movie, what's it like to see that rivalry? It's not where it was in the 80s, but kind of coming back and being a force in college football once again.
You know, I think the rivalries are kind of the lifeblood of college football. And it's fun to watch any college football game, but when it's a rivalry, it's a heated rivalry and one that has history, the stakes are much, much higher. I think that, you know, Notre Dame is going to be hosting Miami this fall. It's November 7th, 2026. Not that we're counting the days, but yeah, that's going to be here before you know it. And these young kids from Miami, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, they're going to travel to South Bend, and they're going to be received by the Notre Dame team. Also young kids. Now, these kids weren't even born when Catholics versus Convicts happened, but I do think that story and the history between these two programs is going to be in the hearts and minds of the people who play in this game. You know, it just increases the stakes as to what the game means and the bragging rights for who's going to win. Not only that, you know, we lost a very close game at Miami.
Right.
this fall, last fall. So not only is it just like the current players want to win that back if you play for Notre Dame, they want to right that wrong, let's say. But there's decades of history between the programs. So that's a big day. I mean, that's, you know, I think you want to email Rent like a champion right now and make sure you have your condos reserved and booked. And I mean, that is a real big game. What you hope is you hope that both teams are really good by the time that day arrives. And of course, that's the big mystery of college football. You really never know who's going to do well and who isn't. I forget who was ranked number one this season. It wasn't Florida State, was it? But, you know, it's funny, the preseason rankings.
Oh, right. Penn State, one of the two.
Florida State might have been the year before. Texas was ranked number one this season. They had a tough year, you know, and they didn't perform the way they thought they were going to. So, you know, that's the thing, is preseason rankings go right out the window about a week or two into the season, and you start to realize who really is good and who's performing, who's healthy, all those things. So it was a really disappointing this year to not make the playoffs, as we all know, if you're in the Notre Dame world, but it really, really sets the stage for next year. You know, if I was going to be devil's advocate, again, I think Notre Dame should have made the playoffs. I'm not really sure Alabama should have made the playoffs. given all the specifics around what happened at the end of the year this year, Miami making the playoffs makes sense. They did beat us. It's a tough pill to swallow, but that makes it more sense than Alabama making the playoffs. Alabama didn't have a great end of the year, and they lost. I think they lost both of their last two games. They certainly lost their last game.
Right.
So for us to not get a spot because of that was really disappointing. At the same time, it just puts all this fuel on the fire for next year. And that might end up being a very good thing for us. We certainly are not going to be lacking motivation next fall. We have a lot of reasons to want to go out and win next fall. And the Miami game is the biggest game of the year for us next year. It's fun. It's how can you not love college football? I saw a great headline earlier this year. It was in the Athletic, which is, you know, the New York Times' version of their sports page, if you will. And it was like a week after Brian Kelly had been let go, and all the madness around him leaving, and all, you know, this was 4 or 5 weeks into the season, and it's just college football is just it's just so much drama. And the headline said something to the effect of, college football is a disaster, which is exactly why we love it. And the whole thing was like all the drama, it's not just the on-field drama. It's everything that happens off the field. It's the coaches, it's the players, it's the transfer portal. It's the rivalries. It's the, I can't believe that team lost last Saturday. Yeah. What the hell were they thinking? So to me, it's by far my favorite sport. Nothing comes close. And this fall is going to be really fun. We're going to have, I think the Rockne film will be very, very far along. And we will probably have a version of the film that's ready to share privately with folks and start getting feedback.
Oh, wow.
But I think the Rockne film will probably not come out until the following fall. We're going to need that time to get this story together and to get it ready to go out to a general public.
Awesome.
General audience. Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today and sharing your stories and going behind the scenes a little bit. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, this is a real pleasure.
And for everyone listening, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Talk to you then.